Thanks for inviting me, Lee. Very good to be here. My talk today is called Machine Learning in Gaming. Just to get a show of hands from the room, any data scientists here? Okay, I can keep the insults then. So does anybody know what machine learning is? Okay, a few of you, which is good, aside from the fact that it's the new 2015 and partial 2014 buzzword. Just to give you a little bit of background about myself, I'm the co-founder of a big data consultancy, which is solely focused on Azure, called ElastiCloud. And over the last couple of years, we've been using machine learning for a number of projects. For my community sins, I also founded the UK Azure User Group. So I've done a lot of sort of community projects around explaining to people the benefits of big data on the cloud, which is really what we see the cloud's major value, this idea of being able to scale out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a background on Azure and what it offers. I'm going to try to keep the maths and the technology down so much when I talk about machine learning. A little bit about the sort of gaming scenarios that would be good to use with respect to machine learning, and then maybe show you a demo or two. Okay. So I can't even keep up with the map that is Azure. I mean, it changes so frequently now. But I wanted to put this slide up just to show everything in context. At the base level, some of the things that you've heard Chris talk about earlier, like the sort of web-driven side, how you can sort of scale out that application presence, that's absolutely fantastic for Azure. Things like being able to have very, very high volume messaging to this so that you can use frameworks like SignalR. I mean, one of the great things is that Microsoft is providing the glue for this. So at the back end, you don't even have to worry about the scale out of SignalR being on a single tenant, because you can direct SignalR to store its state on the messaging subsystem called the service bus messaging, and or in a database, which means that it doesn't matter whether if you're having all this WebSocket interaction, it doesn't actually matter whether or not you're delivering all of this content, all of this web content from one virtual machine or 100 or 1,000, okay? Because the infrastructure framework is there out of the box. It's just a few configuration settings and you can get going. Okay, what we're gonna be focusing on is Azure ML in the corner, which is Microsoft's new machine learning service. And hopefully by the end of this, I'll show you that anybody can get up and running with machine learning and prototype stuff really quickly. So this is really the sort of stuff that my company's been doing for the past, certainly 2.5 years. But it's been a genesis of something called high performance computing, which was about being able to calculate lots of different things on many, many nodes. Then that became big data, where we could process very, very large amounts of data, but still on lots of different nodes. And I think this story fits gaming so well. We've done a couple of case studies, which I might reference later on. And essentially, this is what you get. You get a bunch of game data which can stretch back for years, and it contains so many trends, so many patterns that you're not even aware of at the time. So you can't identify them unless you've got very, very large clusters of machines that can pull out these trends and tell you something that you may have missed. But at the same time, you've got all of these incoming game events, and from some of the work that we've been doing, you know, this scales to tens of millions of messages a month per game. You know, so when you've got games that are supporting, you know, hundreds of thousands of users actively, and you've got all this interaction going on, it's about trying to make sense of this. And so rather than go into the semantics of what's called Lambda architecture, which is a term that was coined by the creator of Apache Storm, Nathan Mars, whose company Backtype was sold out to Twitter, which now pretty much underpins all of the analytics that Twitter do. What this picture actually says for gaming is that any gaming events that are incoming, you can then process and look at within the historical context of that game. And that's a really powerful proposition, because that it means that with the compute power of the cloud, you can analyze what you're seeing pretty much in real time against what was years ago, see how things have changed, be able to generate and spin off events or different kinds of things within a game, but within near real time. A lot of companies are using this technique at the moment. One of the pieces of work that we built was focused around A/B testing and being able to take very large volumes of data overnight or within an hour and test the market, then work out whether that change was good for that bucket. But to be able to turn this around so quickly, because there are so many resources in the cloud, is really what we're trying to aspire to. So there's a couple of frameworks here that Azure offers out of the box. The first one is HD Insight, which is Hadoop. Many of you will notice the iconic yellow elephant after the toy, Hadoop, and Apache Storm. So you put both of these things together, and then you can start doing something with the data in that context. You might need intermediate state, so you might need a state store to store things, and you might need to visualize this as well, because we're not that good at looking at raw numbers with like 8 decimal precision, so we want to see these things on nice graphs. So this is now a cohesive Microsoft story. But the thing in the middle is the thing that's really important, because that's the thing that's going to give you predictions around what your users are going to do tomorrow, what they're going to do in the next hour, okay? So let's just do a machine learning overview. I'm treading on ground that people have covered, but I want to, and I really am dumbing this down. But this is something. I come from a developer background. I have a maths background, not academic physics background academically, but I know enough maths to have taught myself machine learning, and it's something that I think developers can get to grips with very quickly, especially with the tools that we've got available now. Put really simply, this is about trying to learn from a bunch of data that you have and then using that data to predict, using new incoming data, like the messages that we talked about, something about those messages that you don't know. And the upshot is that when you take this initial block of data, and it can be 1 gig, it can be 1 terabyte, it can be as much as you want, you can train that data using something called a model. So you train a model from that data. You can leave a small bit of that data, and that data may be, you might have incoming messages with player wins or whether or not a player has monetized with your game yet, or it could be any number of things that you're capturing. And these things that in machine learning speak are called features, you can then use to predict. So if you take, just as an example, if you take 80% of that data set that you want to train, and you then use that to build that model, then what you can do is you can test the 20% that's left over, and you can try to predict something about that player activity or those messages that are coming in. And you can work out how effective that model is. And it might be better under some circumstances than others. And you can keep tweaking this, because the machine can keep building this model, as in machine learning, it learns. And then we can evaluate this, and we can keep evaluating this so that the model gets better and better and better, and we get more accurate predictions about what players are going to do. So I'm going to take you back a little bit to high school statistics. So this is a regression line. There's a bunch of data points here. This is actually, does anybody know what the economic principle behind this is called? Okay, Okun's law. I'm not sure how true this is these days, but basically this says that a change in GDP will affect the unemployment rate that way. But you can see we've got a bunch of data points, and what we're doing is we're trying to find the line of best fit. This is not actually uncommon, without giving too much information away. We were looking at doing this on a per player basis for being able to monetize a particular game, online sort of gambling game for stake values, to work out at what point the player would actually stop staking money and making that prediction. So there are some really simple statistical models, and this simple where you can apply this to in gaming, and you can probably think about some of these and how it would impact your own games. The great thing about this is that it's really easy to understand, and you don't just need to use two variables. I can use 10, and the algorithms that I'm going to show you will just understand, you know, how to scale that up. So you can't think of this in terms of XY values on a graph. I've just simplified this, but it makes absolutely no difference to the software. It understands that already. So then we've got another area, which is called unsupervised learning, k-means clustering. So all of this does is it can take all of the different things that I mentioned, you know, whether or not you've monetized a game, the number of player wins, you know, how fast they're going up levels, how long, what the periods they spend on the game or not. And you could try to work out categories of users, groups of users, because there may be a lot of data. You might have 10, 20 columns of things that you're collecting. And if you feed it into these functions will be able to show you, it'll be able to do what's called dimensionality reduction. So we're seeing this on a 2D graph here. But this is essentially what it is. It would say you've actually got three or four types of players. Not that I know, because I've never spoken to the bigger types of gaming companies, but you've got concepts like whale. In game. Whale? Is that the right term? Yeah. This is how you would predict it. You know, you could take in all of this data and you would find outliers, or you would find small clusters which would just immediately show you who are your VIPs, because you've created these categories. You don't need to put any labels, it will just be emergent. Okay? Right. Then, really interesting, if you have multiple games, a lot of people are using machine learning now to do this sort of thing, where let's say you've got tens of thousands of users, and some are playing some games, some are playing other games, and you want to be able to recommend the right kind of games to the right users. You calculate coefficients of similarity between these users, and that will just give you a number, and it will say this user is like this user, and They haven't actually tried these games. Send an advert to their phone, whatever. They would really like these games. And you can very, very easily, with this algorithm, just rank a list of things that the user's going to like and then send it back to them to determine what the next game they should be playing is. Then something called classification. I ripped this off the internet, so I'm just going to make the background to this up, because I don't know what the author had in mind. But let's say that you collect some data about animals, and it could be something like weight, it could be sharpness of teeth, it could be fur, you could actually be looking at images using image recognition, and the features that you're looking at are like RGB features, like trying to detect the shape of the ear or the mouth or the teeth or whatever. And this could be in a bunch of figures, and as a result of that, you can see here we've got pretty much a jagged dividing line which shows the difference between what cats and dogs are in terms of the data points. But what classification is doing, it's writing a function which is not really linear, you can see there, that curve function. And that will tell us where the dividing line is between cats and dogs. So you can see here that some dogs fall on the side of the cats, so the model's not 100% accurate there, but it's very, very simple, very quick to calculate, and will give us like an 80% accuracy whether the data that we get in will be either a cat or a dog. So this is where, unfortunately, it gets a little bit more complicated and more mathsy. We're not going to go into this too much, but at the end of all of this, you need to work out whether or not what you've done is going to work in the real world or not. And that's really a continual process. You know, you continually get more data, the shape of that data changes, you have to continually test that to make better and better predictions. And that's the great thing about all these automated tools, like the one we're going to see, Azure ML. But you get a whole bunch of error values, and you can work out from the error values if the general rule is, if any of these things are closer to one, it's better, although it's a little bit more complicated than that. And you can keep tweaking this until you get better results. So gaming scenarios. So essentially, these are the types of systems that we want to look at, and the cloud has really enabled this out of the box. We want to be capturing messages, and we want to be using these messaging systems almost as a state machine. You know, we don't, for example, the Azure Service Bus, the Event Hub, if we don't collect messages from them, as long as they can scale, right? So let's say that our message consumer has broken, right? It's not going to matter for a few hours, right? Even if you've got floods and floods of messages, because Microsoft is worrying about that. They're worrying about the backing store, okay? So decoupling the game events from the actual processing them is really good. And out of the box, the de facto messaging within Azure will ensure that you've got that level of integrity. So you stream all this data in about your users in the form of messages. Then you can aggregate this. You can do simple aggregations, but because you're doing it in a distributed fashion through Hadoop, our product Brisk, which I'll talk about briefly, uses Spark under the seams. Simple things like averages, maxes, counts, every 30 seconds. It doesn't matter across how much data. Those calculations will be distributed across the cluster and you'll get them within seconds. And then you can use them for whatever you want. So you got your incoming data. You can create data within the right format, because all of these machine learning functions, they love numbers. It's mathsy. And then some of the things that we looked at, collaborative filtering, which is the recommenders, classification, the cats and dogs example, or clustering, which we looked at earlier, you can just apply. And you can begin to sort of apply these in real time as the data changes. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to switch to... Control-P. I'm just going to show you... Don't send. I won't bother Microsoft with that. I'm just going to show you Azure ML, which is Microsoft's new machine learning. I prepared something earlier because I only had half an hour. So I prepared a model, and what I'll do is I'll talk you through this. Because any one of you can begin to start using this and begin to prototype, because all of the hard work is done for you. And believe me when I say I've used so many different machine learning tools, and even though I'm an Azure MVP and I've used Azure for a very long time, without a doubt this is the best. I don't know why that didn't open up. Better than Internet Explorer, apparently. Oh, it's blocking that somewhere. Lee, can you give me some IE help? I'm just trying to get another window up, and it seems to be blocking that. There you go, Chrome's really insecure and IE isn't. Um, Is that going to work? No, same page. Where has that window gone? Have I got, like, got a whole bunch of windows open? IE windows. No, it doesn't look like it. It's on this. No. How strange. Open. Okay, that's better. Okay. So this is what I did. We can probably replicate this from scratch within about 10 minutes, no word of a lie, but we don't have 10 minutes. So I'll show you what I did last night. I took a default data set, which is the Pima Indians diabetes data set. So try to predict from bits and pieces of genetic data, skin thickness, whether or not we can determine whether a Pima Indian that visits a GP is going to have diabetes or not from this. And you can see here that we've got, these are our features in this case, plasma glucose, diastolic blood pressure, skin on the skin thickness on the triceps. So all of these must have some kind of medical relationship to whether or not someone has got diabetes. And essentially, what we're trying to predict is this. So we looked at this idea of cats and dogs and classification. This is exactly the same thing. Instead of using the cats and dogs example, all we're doing is using some features that are associated with people with the medical condition. And so in this case, you can see that we've dumbed this down to one or zero. Has this person got diabetes as a result? Can we predict it from these sets of things or not? So if you think about this, right, you can apply this in exactly the same way to gaming, right? If you wanted to, for example, take a bunch of features and then predict whether or not someone who you haven't monetized yet in your game was going to be monetized within a certain time period, you could do that. And you can see here one thing that's actually really interesting, which is UML does over every other framework. You can see in here that everything is a number, right? And to get the data into that form is actually incredibly difficult, especially when you're using labels and words all over the place and you had to replace things. One of the great things about Azure ML is that it does all that for you. If I had unique words here instead of this, it would do things called feature hashing on top of this. And I wouldn't have to worry about it. I wouldn't have to worry about reducing this to a bunch of meaningless numbers that only the framework can worry about. I just feed it into Azure ML and it does it for me. So that's what the data looks like. And you can see there's a pipeline of stuff that I'm doing. It's not actually that so relevant. But when I want to start this, I just hit run here. And you can see here what that will do is, I'm not going to do that now because it will take a couple of minutes. It will give me a bunch of green ticks, whether it's successful or not. I haven't written any code for this. Very simply, I've just dragged and dropped a few boxes from there. In this case, the dataset's been uploaded, but I can read this from Blob Storage if I want to. I can read this from SQL Server. I can read this from a Hadoop cluster using Hive. Right? All of these connectors exist, and it's extensible as well. So at the end of this, we're using a couple of algorithms here. We're using a neural network. We're also using logistic regression. These are two binary classifiers. And we get probabilities on whether or not it's a yes or a no here. And it automatically sets a threshold and et cetera, et cetera. So what I've done is I've created two models here. So with the same data, I want to test these against a neural network and against this other algorithm called logistic regression. I click evaluate, and it shows me a curve. Again, a little bit mathsy, but immediately I can tell the efficiency of these models. And you can see more or less here, you've got something there called, they call it a confusion matrix. So you can see here that out of the out of the data that I've had incoming about the diabetes, out of those, 56 of them in that were positive, that were where the tests were positive, I guessed right 56 out of 56 plus 18 is 74 times, and 18 times wrong. Okay, so my model's not actually that bad. Then correspondingly, you can see on the negative side, I guessed right 232 times over 78. Okay, so that's 310 times, 232 guesses correct. Okay, so you can see here that this is better than chance already. And I've literally had to do 10 minutes of work to get this up and running. And the beautiful thing is, I can compare two different types of things. Okay, so I'm comparing two models which have different levels of efficiency over the choosing of the negatives and the positives, and I can work out which one fits my data better. Okay, so what I'm without going into that too much, I'm happy to talk to people about how they can get up and running with this very, very quickly, afterwards to test with their own data. What I will do is I'll tell you a little bit about what we've done because, in fact, before I do, I need to cover some of the most important things about this. This makes it very easy to publish data, so to publish this model. So in this case, if I wanted to do something like that, let's run that again. What I could do is I could publish this as a web service. And then if I wanted to pass all of those feature values to this model now, and those feature values would be the things that you looked at, the diastolic blood pressure and the... If I had those numbers in the right form, I could just... This would just automatically create a web service endpoint for me. It would all be secured. And I could just post those things to it and I could get that prediction of whether or not it was somebody was going to... I was going to predict that they had diabetes or not. So it makes it very, very easy to start introducing this into like a process pipeline. I'll just leave that running in the background. So this is, we don't have time to go through this, but this is one of the things that we've been doing is we wanted to reduce the difficulty in putting complex infrastructure up. So we found that Microsoft Platform Services are absolutely fantastic, as you can see with Azure ML, but they're not right for all people. So we chose a bunch of frameworks. We've chosen Apache Kafka, which is a very sort of high-performance, high-throughput messaging system, and Apache Spark, which is like the Hadoop that I talked about, but uses runs in memory and has some very sort of special SQL modules so that you can take all these incoming JSON messages and just convert them into something that you can query in real time and stream. And it was interesting because I was just looking around for data sets to do with gaming, and I couldn't find any. I mean, there are a few which were completely, I would say, either defunct or irrelevant, or so. I mean, I think it would definitely behoove the gaming community to make more of a thing of this, because there's really nothing for people to get up and running with really quickly, in terms of I want to experiment. I want to see what other people have done in the analytics space, because it seems to me that a lot of this is either owned by very, very large gaming companies who keep their IP very secure, or other gaming companies like yourselves don't realize the value of your data yet, and what this could potentially lead to in terms of turnaround time of developing new features in your application to monetize. But the point that I wanted to make today is that the technology is all available for this. If any of you want to sign up for our platform Brisk, then you know, happy to have conversations with you, maybe sort of give you some help and guidance around this area, share some of our experiences and get you up and running. Got a free tier, like Microsoft when they first released DOS, Windows were happy to have loads of people copy it and use it for free, pirated. Same here, so you know, it's better to have thousands of freemium users, I think, than none at all. So yeah, really like to have some conversations with anybody that's thinking of doing this and maybe introducing some analytics, seeing, you know, whether we can give you any guidance and get you using our platform. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Any questions for Richard?
I noticed that in one bit it talked about had entry about OpenCV there. So can you pass the images in and write a little module for determining gender, age, and
yes, yeah, you can. I haven't, that's very new to Azure ML, so I haven't tried it myself, but and there's some documentation on the Azure website for that.
Because in the Connect SDK there's some machine learning bits for things that have been run locally. Just wondering if you can move things, certain bits into the cloud.
Oh right, okay. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I haven't looked at the Connect SDK myself.
Connect one has things like are you seated or
right, okay.
Facial recognition side of things.
Yeah, and I mean the thing is there are some really really good examples here in terms of image recognition. If you look at some of the data sets, let me see. You can see there's a Bill Gates RGB image, and there's some example experiments that you can do to get started on this really quickly. In fact, I would say that in terms of the examples, this is possibly one of the most fully featured example services that I've seen. You can see here, you click new, you can either start blank or you can start with a whole bunch of these to really understand how to do things. At the moment, the only flexibility that you've got outside of this framework is to use R. So if you're not familiar with R, it can be a bit of a problem, but there's a whole bunch of R modules and R libraries which will allow you to manipulate the things that Azure ML doesn't support. So R and Python are fairly fully featured with machine learning, so you can technically say this does everything at the moment, but with a little bit of effort. What I'd like to see personally going forward is there's a lot of C# analytics libraries which are underpinning this, and Microsoft Research have written one called Infer.net, which is really very good, and I think that there were some issues with licensing this because it was only licensable for the academic community. But what I'm hoping is that these will surface within Azure ML, so that people can write more and more C# code.
Have you been to my blog?
I haven't, though, no, sorry. I have done in the past.
No, so I actually blogged about this last week.
Okay.
I had a load of people straight away saying, good to use this commercially. So I saw from Microsoft Bluetooth, so I'll speak in later.
Okay, great.
I was just going to add, you made a comment earlier about not seeing that much data out there in terms of, or these models at least, of games. I wonder if this is a symptom of data being something that's relatively new to game developers. I mean, particularly with the shift from the publisher-developer model, where basically a lot of the data was handled by the publishers and it was all about retail, it wasn't about individual users. In fact, we weren't generally collecting it. You know, before 2008, I would argue we weren't collecting that kind of data. And I think it's a fundamental problem as well right now where, like you say, the big parties see it as commercially sensitive. And I think until we see enough people using this data stuff seriously, we're not going to get the value of anonymized sharing. And actually, the industry as a whole is going to suffer because we're not going to get the deeper, richer insights that we see in other industries. So I think
absolutely.
You're absolutely
right. And I think, you know, I think until you get that, there's not going to be any presence of published application patterns, you know, in terms of the types of things where people are doing A/B testing and the hows and the whys and the... because you do need to relate that back to the structure and the volume of data.
Well, I've been thinking back to when Alex and I were doing mobile operator stuff, and we set up the Elspa group that was collecting mobile data. And before that, you had obviously ChartTrack. And since the operator stopped being important, we've stopped getting data. I think that's tragic.
I was kind of thinking of a similar thing to what Oscar was just brought up during your talk, and you said an interesting thing I picked up on as a businessman was that people don't know the value of their data. Are you, do you think that the data, how it exists at the moment, could be monetized? Can people, because you talked about anonymized data,
yeah,
and stuff
course.
Like that, but I mean, is there anyone, are people selling it yet? Or
well,
I suppose for us, this industry, for games really specifically.
Yeah, I mean, not that I've seen in gaming, but I mean, I wouldn't have thought there would have been any problem. I mean, there's so much issue in the US about all these companies that are popping up in Texas now and reselling medical data, and you know, this stuff has an immediate value. I mean, just from the two companies that we've been doing work from. I don't think that they can function properly without doing this level of processing that they do on batch or in real time. So for them, it's tantamount to a business. I think that if data was out there, even for purchase, you could sort of tune your business around what the sort of common market trends are. I don't really see.
That's
you know,
what I thought. Through your entire talk is what
yeah.
that was what
you
I was
definitely
thinking.
Could, but I haven't seen any availability of data sets, no.
Okay, well, no, I was just going to say, I'm just starting a game data brokering firm right now. If anyone wants to and come and talk to me, I'll take a 10% commission for sales.
Yeah, oh, brilliant, yeah.
You sell it, I don't want to sell it.
Yeah, no, I'll sell it.
It's more valuable to be shared than it is the money that you can make on the it's the volume of information that will make that more valuable. So we'll be able to make more money as businesses by sharing.
Oh, absolutely, but as a broker I could make more money.
Yeah, you should definitely use the Azure data marketplace.
So just to stress on that, Simon, there's an actual service called Azure Data Market. So if you go to the Azure Marketplace, you can actually sell data.
Yeah.
So you can build a data set, and it's OO data format, and you can make that resellable. And you can charge whatever you would like, free, chargeable per download, chargeable per transaction. And again, lots of other verticals are doing this. It's just at present, gaming isn't a vertical that's really looked at data, but as you all know, you're producing vast amounts.
Well, we're a technologically secretive.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.